Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchi, and my co-host today is Scott Fish. Hello, Scott.
Hello. It's good to be here.
Twice in like 3 weeks. That's pretty wild. All right.
I know. So yeah. I want to start the show off with something weird. In order to do this show today, I had to send the kids to the grandparents.
Thank you.
And come up here to do the show. And I told the wife, you're going to have the house to yourself for most of the day.
Yeah.
And she wasn't heartbroken by that.
No.
she seemed almost
strangely happy about that.
She was giddy.
Get going.
Very weird.
Yeah, it is very weird. By the way, it's get to do the show, not have to do the show. As a quick reminder.
Yes, it's very enjoyable. I love doing this show.
Well, good, because we go to the two-hour format next week.
Oh,
We're back into regular season mode.
And that'll be me again.
And, yeah, I know.
I'm there.
Back-to-backs. That'll be great. So
yes.
All kinds of training camp updates and stuff. And we're starting to get some of the training camp stuff starting to hit. But we're focusing this show, Scott, on the NFC North, the last of our eight divisions. We timed it out with the start of training camp and everything else. It's perfect. And we'll hit the teams in the NFC North. We're going to get Detroit out of the way first. It's the least to say about that team, or at least interesting stuff to say. No offense to you. I mean, you're going to do your best with what you're given. Don't get me wrong. And
I can't kill 10 minutes on Kenny Golladay anymore.
No, you can't. Exactly. And you weren't even here for the NFC East to do Kenny Golladay So, yeah, unfortunately. A quick mention, guillotineleagues.com. We're rolling guillotine leagues right now. If you want to join a guillotine league and try the freshest, funnest new way to play, we encourage you to check that out. 18 teams start the season. Every week, the lowest scoring team gets cut, and all their players go to the waiver wire, and pandemonium ensues. Scott, you've played in several guillotine
yes.
leagues, and it's tons of fun.
Yes, I am not great at them. I do usually make it 6 to 8 weeks. But I am not I'm never a contender, and I'm never out first.
Part of the beauty of the guillotine league is there's no playbook yet.
No.
Right? And there's not just like one way to win, and there aren't, you know, the experts haven't like cracked the code on the guillotine league yet. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, for example, in one of my guillotine leagues that just got done drafting recently, I had Cam Akers. But I can rebound from it easier in a guillotine league than any other format, because if I can just survive week one, some good running back's going to get cut off of somebody's roster, mm-hmm. yep. and I can go fill that. I'll have to pay to do it. I'll have to make a big fab push to do it, but if I feel like I need to, I can.
I wish there was a show out there that I could listen to that could help me last past week 6 or 8.
Well, that would be the CHOP podcast. Thank you very much for teeing that up. I appreciate it. If you're not already subscribed to CHOP, the Guillotine League podcast, we encourage you to do that. And there's a new episode of that, by the way. Let's dive into the Detroit Lions.
Let's do it.
Yeah, it feels like another in a series of perpetual rebuilds.
Yep.
For our Lions.
Yep. I'm going to start at the quarterback position with David Bluff and Tim Boyle. Okay, I won't start there. I'll start with Jared Goff, who's going undrafted in your normal 18-round leagues.
Isn't that nice?
Probably rightfully so. But I'll stick with him anyway. Last year, Stafford played all 16 games, barely had 4,000 yards. He had 26 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. That's Stafford, who puts up stats.
Yeah, he does.
Stat Padford, as they call him.
Yeah.
I feel like that's Goff's absolute ceiling.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's any chance he gets above that. And last year, Stafford had better weapons like Golladay and Marvin Jones. This year, they don't have much.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't even think Goff is even worth drafting. I think this is accurate, his non-ADP.
I think he's going to be a situational starter because the Lions will be behind in almost every game,
yes.
and you're going to find those easier pass defenses
yes.
that will relax
at
the end of games. And
he's ownable.
He'll pad some stats.
You can roster him in super flex, and he's going to be a waiver wire guy for sure, but for draft-wise, I'm not drafting him.
He will be a take-a-chance-on-me guy
a
lot.
He will be. Yeah, he'll be a five-time take-a-chance-on-me
yes,
player.
He will be, over the course of the season. Now, the bad news is who he's throwing to.
Right, yeah. And really, let's just start with T.J. Hawkinson, honestly, because that's what it is.
He's sitting on a big year.
He is, reportedly in camp, he is better than all the wide receivers.
I'm not surprised.
His cuts and breaks are better than all of them, mm-hmm. which doesn't surprise me. He's last year's tight end 4,
He's my tight end 4 right now.
And my tight end 4.
Nice, all right.
And he's being drafted as tight end 6.
Yeah, I don't get that.
That feels wrong.
It's the Kyle Pitts people, because Kyle Pitts is tight end 4.
I think Hockenson is closer to that top 3 than he is to the guys below him, the Andrews Pitts group. Yeah. I do feel like it's a mini tier of his own.
I agree with that.
But he's my tight end 4, your tight end 4, last year's tight end 4. In an offense without many pass catchers, in an offense that's going to be kept playing, we've just mentioned, playing from behind a lot. Mm-hmm. He had over 100 targets last year with better weapons around him. I just don't see a way that he doesn't get 20 to 30 more targets. He maybe fights for that 100 catch range this year. He had 69 or something like that last year. I could see 20 plus more catches this year.
Yeah, it's as simple as this. He's a really good player.
Yeah.
TJ Hockenson on a he's the best receiver on the team.
Yep.
They're going to be down in every game.
Yep.
So that's it. You roll that together, he's sitting on a big year.
Yep. Late fifth round, and if you don't invest in those first three, I'm loving that late fifth round, because you've already got probably a couple running backs and wide receivers.
Yeah, right. You're filling in. And, you know, in one of those top three guys probably falters due to injury or whatever.
Could.
And Hockenson ends up in the top three.
Yeah.
I think there's a coin flip chance he's one of the top three.
This is one of those years. There's generally, it's get one of the top two or three or wait till like way late.
Right.
This one, I feel like there's a middle. I feel like there's Hockenson and Pitts and Mark Andrews and guys in the middle that mm-hmm. you can feel decently comfortable with.
I agree with that, except for the Pitts part. And I detailed it on the show last week. You know, the dangers of the first round tight end, you know it well, because you and I have talked about this for many years, and he's got to break 20 years of trends, and he might be good enough to do it, and especially if they don't play him at tight end. If they just play him really as a standing slot and outside receiver, then I think Pitts could do it, but otherwise I'm worried.
It's all about where he's going. If you have been tight end 6, tight end 6, 7 in the tight end landscape is like 700 yards and 5 or 6 touchdowns.
That's attainable.
I think that's like at tight end 6, it's actually okay.
I agree.
And the upside, you know, that's probably why he's going, because of upside. But
we're
not here to
talk
about
Pitts. That's right. We're not here to say,
yeah.
And you know what? I don't really want to talk about the receivers, but I suppose we need to mention Breshad Perriman and Quintus Cephas.
I actually only have one receiver I want to talk about.
Fine.
I will say Breshad Perriman, you know, he's got those line bloodlines, so maybe that helps. His dad played on the team.
That's true.
Cephas flashed a little at the end of last year. Tyrell the Gazelle flashed with the Chargers and the Raiders, but I don't think they're anything better than waiver wire pickups in those bad games. Amon-Ra St. Brown, I think, is a sneaky play to possibly lead this team in targets and catches. I think it's within reason.
You think a Lions rookie receiver can lead the team, including TJ Hockenson, in targets?
I think it's
going to
be him and TJ Hockenson are the two.
Wow.
Okay. I think Goff might lean on him like he leaned on Kupp from the slot. Mm-hmm. Everything reported out of Amon-Ra is that he is working like crazy. He's taking it super serious. He's there before people. He's leaving after people. Mm-hmm. He's on the jug machine for an hour, just catching like one-handed after everyone's already gone. He is taking every ounce of this seriously. And even the other two St. Brown brothers, you know, Osiris and Equinemius, are like, he's the best of us.
Yeah.
I just feel like he is going to get in there sooner than later, and he's going to become Goff's safety blanket.
Interesting.
But my main love about him is he could be the wide receiver 1 on this team, mm-hmm. and he's going in the 14th round.
Yeah.
That's your price tag. That's what you like on him.
Yeah. How quickly does he become a reliable fantasy starter?
I honestly don't know, that's a big question. But we're talking about the guy who's like 5 deep on your bench also. You know what I mean? Right. Like it's not
a heavy investment. Yeah, if it takes a while.
Exactly. It's mm-hmm. it's one of those where it might be a pass heavy team and he might come out as the one.
Yeah. Makes sense. All right. You know, it's not like he's got to get by many talented receivers.
Nope, he really doesn't.
What's his percentage of plays run from the slot versus outside?
I actually don't know that off the top of my head.
Do you think? Well, no, estimating
for this
going
year.
Forward.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about...
No, not past. Going forward, what do you think?
Talking about UC. Just because of the players that they have on the outside are all burners.
Right.
I think he's got to play in the slot most of the time.
And
that keeps him on the field.
That's why I'm asking.
These guys aren't slot guys.
Right. That's why I'm asking. The slot is his pathway to playing time. And think about how good Cooper Kupp was with Goff as a rookie.
Yep.
That's your upside here, right?
Yep. Yep. That's, and again, 14th round. That's why, like, every year there's a wide receiver that's the wide receiver one on the team going super late, and you're like, this is a wide receiver one you're getting here.
Yeah.
I think it's possible you get a wide receiver one in the 14th round.
Now, we don't have Sean McVay on this coaching staff. True. We've got Anthony Lynn, who, in fairness, you know, he never should have been a head coach, but just look at what he did for Justin Herbert.
Right.
Right. He was able to, he was able to craft a good offense last year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, it's not a disaster with this new coaching staff.
No, it isn't. And I mean, Keenan Allen, Amon-Ra is not Keenan Allen from the slot.
Correct.
And,
right.
You don't know.
Not yet.
Yep. So, we'll see. But talking about Anthony Lynn and the way he uses backs is interesting because he does like to split it up. He famously talks about having an A back, the between the tackles, you know, pound him down back, and the B back, like the Austin Eckler, that will play in the slot a decent amount. And he said Jamal Williams is his A back, his between the tackles guy, his more power back, and DeAndre Swift is the B back. He's gonna jump outside and catch passes, which I like for DeAndre Swift. But if he's not getting a full workload, I think where he's being drafted as RB19 is kind of fair. But I also think it's more closer to his floor.
Yeah,
I could see a pathway for DeAndre Swift to be a top 12 back. He's just got to get more of that work than Anthony Lynn's letting on.
Right, and he needs to get goal line carries. Yeah. If he's got to manufacture his touchdowns from outside the 5-yard line, that makes it a lot harder. If he's saying that Jamal Williams is going to be my A gap, B gap guy, that suggests to me that Williams will get the goal line work.
Yeah, that's the problem. You have to, and with an offense that's going to be behind a lot, that's negative game scrap for a running back generally. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to buoy that with the pass catching ability, which should go to Swift, so that helps him there. But yeah, the goal line work, the inside the five work is where it's going to be. We're going to have to see what happens there. So I think people are baking that risk into his ADP, and that's why I do feel like RB19 at the end of the third is likely closer to his floor for me. Jamal Williams going in the 9th round, RB44. I'm fine with that because if Swift goes down, you have a workhorse back. So the fact that he's going in those Pollard Madison ranges makes sense.
And you can start him in a pinch anyway. You can flex Jamal Williams if you need to.
Yeah. And this is Anthony Lynn with the Chargers, they were putting 20 to 30 touches with the running backs weekly. Mm-hmm. I could see him being an 8, 9, 10, 12 touch guy most weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Absolutely fair.
All right. Who is the player that is, we do this at the end of every team. Who's the player at his current ADP that you think is the riskiest of the Lions? And all the ADPs are suppressed here.
Yeah.
So I'm sure this was a little tricky.
Yeah. Yeah. This is really, really interesting. The most risky, I guess, oh man, I don't even see the fact that Goff doesn't even have an ADP.
Well, I know, that's the thing, right? It almost has to be Swift by definition.
It really does.
Nobody else except Hockenson's getting even drafted, and we love Hockenson.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be Swift, just kind of like we thought Akers was the one, just because he's the one going the highest.
Right.
So the highest, when you're using such a high draft capital, that's the risk, is the high draft capital. It is him, but I still feel it's fair.
Okay, that's fine. And the player with the most upside compared to ADP.
I think we know where I'm going with that. Like, I think Hockenson could be a top three guy, but I think
Amon-Ra,
fifth,
obviously.
But it's Amon-Ra for me. I just feel he's a guy that he could end up with over, like, Marvin Jones had like 100 targets last year. If he turns into Marvin Jones, but from the slot, and becomes that safety blanket, you're getting him in the 14th round, and he might be their wide receiver one.
When we come back from this break, the gang's back together in Green Bay. We'll tell you what to expect from the Aaron Rodgers-led Green Bay Packers. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchi and Scott Fish with you. We're going around the NFC North, previewing how we expect this season to go. We specifically don't do a lot of recap on last year. You already know how that went. So it's all forward-looking. Let's go to Green Bay. Gang's back together. And Scott, they're playing mad.
They
got a chip on their shoulder.
Yep.
At least A-Rodge does.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers with new love and this anger. And I hate mad Aaron Rodgers. He's just too so good.
I know. I think he's sitting on a nice year.
Yeah.
So Green Bay's playing for a Super Bowl this year. How committed are they to a this year's Super Bowl, Scott? Not only are they over the cap for next year, they're over the maximum amount the cap can possibly increase next year.
Jeez.
That's the Packers' current contract situation for next season. So, as you know, Aaron Rodgers reported back at the start of training camp, said his piece. He's the new quarterback. The only reason to believe Rodgers will be any worse than last year's MVP season is the declining state of his offensive line and the fact that he's a year older. He'll turn 38 this year. So, you know, maybe this is the year when the arm starts to erode a bit. But we don't have any reason to believe that's the case. You know, for dynasty holders, keeping Jordan Love, you got another year to wait. and here's the part that really worries me, and I am a dynasty owner holding Jordan Love. Mm-hmm. If Jordan Love looked NFL ready, this team would have shipped Rodgers for the 3 first-round picks they wanted, reportedly, and, you know, yep, whatever. They'd have made that deal and gone ahead with Love and got their picks.
Yep.
They don't think Love can win, and so they're all in on this year's Super Bowl.
Yep, completely agree.
So I think you're holding Love for at least another year, and even then you're not sure. If he didn't look NFL ready now, is he going to look NFL ready a year from now?
Yeah, I expect the Packers to draft another quarterback next year.
I do too. All right, so you know what to expect at Aaron Rodgers. I don't even need to talk really about him and his fantasy prospects. I have him at quarterback 5. All 4 of the quarterbacks before him are rushing quarterbacks. And you know, guys that are going to chip in some on the ground. Rodgers really isn't that guy anymore.
You missed your window to get him cheap already.
You did. Yep, that window's shut. You know, you could have got him as quarterback 13, 15, 17, 19, and that's all dead. Now you're going to have to spend a 5th-round pick, 6th-round pick on Aaron Rodgers if you want him. So let's talk about the offensive line. Scott, this is the part, this is the one wrinkle where you worry about this team a bit. So they've lost Brian Bulaga, Corey Linsley, and Rick Wagner. Bulaga 2 years ago. David Bakhtiari's coming off an ACL. He's on the PUP list right now. They don't know if he's going to be ready for the start of the season. Pro Football Focus ranked last year's line at number 2 overall. Aaron Rodgers was the least pressured quarterback in the NFL. Pro Football Focus projects this year's line at 15th. That is a sizable drop from number 2.
Yeah.
Utility lineman Billy Wagner is going to try to be the full-time right tackle this year. They've got this elite utility lineman that they drafted, Elgton Jenkins. Awesome player and one of the great draft picks that, you know, for all the heat that Brian Gutekunst has taken, that pick, he nailed that pick.
Jair Alexander, too. He's
Jair Alexander, right. So they got Jenkins now playing a little bit of left tackle, and they're worried that he might have to go left tackle. He's really an interior guy, but they're worried he's going to have to play left tackle if it turns out Bakhtiari can't go. Second-round rookie Josh Myers is going to have to make starts at center. There's an offensive line that, for the Packers, where there's been tremendous stability, has got a lot of flux right now. And with that, it opens up the prospect of some worse and, I think, less consistent play for the entire offense. Let's talk about wideouts. Davante Adams, you already know everything you need to know about Adams. Currently playing in the last year of his previous deal, so he's playing for money. The only question to me is he wide receiver 1 or wide receiver 2 in your fantasy rankings? Where do you have him, Scott?
I have him 1 currently.
1?
Yep. Yeah,
I have no problem with that. I have Tyreek Hill 1, and I have him 2.
No problem with that either.
And, you know, and part of it is, and this is just the emotional side of me, I just love having Tyreek Hill on my team because when Patrick Mahomes is airing out these 60-yard bombs, I know who's on the other end of that. And while that ball is at mid-arc of its zenith, I'm already standing in my living room, jumping up and down at the prospect of Tyreek Hill pulling that in.
And you love the idea of Mahomes throwing tons and tons of touchdown passes because their wide receiver 3 usually doesn't get much.
That's right.
Not even their 2 usually.
Right,
it's usually just Hill and Kelsey. Yeah.
And I believe Mahomes has got 50 touchdowns in him this year.
Yeah.
The improved offensive line. I just think this offense is ready to explode. Well, they already explodes. I think even beyond, it's going to be a whole half step better than last year's, I think. Anyway, we're not here to talk.
We're really jumping into other Chargers and Pants and Mahomes. This is what happens when we get together, though. We talk a lot of football.
Which I love. All right, so you already know there's no downside with Adams whatsoever. Even if he and the team are at a contract impasse, whatever else. If everybody's playing mad, I still love these guys, and I still want every part of it. But let's go to the rest of the wide receivers, because there's a lot to talk about here, and far more interesting. Marquez Valdes-Scantling has perpetually burned fantasy owners because he has this one great deep pass that shows up on everybody's highlights, and he has post this big game. Everybody runs the waiver wire. You pick him up, and then he does nothing for like three straight games. And I mean nothing. So I went through the last 2 years when he does not score, which is most of the time, by the way. You know, he's like four touchdowns a year. Here's your average game when Marquez Valdes-Scantling does not score. 1.5 catches for 20 yards.
Jeez.
Decimating your team.
What's crazy is I knew you were setting up for something low, and it went lower than I expected.
Right, exactly.
Oh, man.
Now, he did lead the NFL in average targeted air yards last year at 18, which is insane.
For my targeted air yardage leagues, that's amazing.
That's a huge, that's right.
Good.
First rounder. You don't have to catch it. That's the best part. You just targeted. So way too much risk, and you know, maybe this is the season it all comes together, but I can't have guys like that on my fantasy team, because that guy produces losses when he does not score, and he usually does not score in guillotine leagues. This is a total disaster. Mm-hmm. Alan Lazard ran mostly from the slot, and you might be tempted to take him because you know Rodgers sitting on what should be a good year, but then if you're Alan Lazard, here comes your quarterback lobbying for a different slot wide receiver in Randall Cobb, and they got him. So now Randall Cobb is there, and that leaves Alan Lazard as the odd man out, because we know Rodgers wants Cobb to be the starter. So Lazard's stuck. He can run outside, and he ran about 40% of his plays last year from the outside, but he mostly is a slot receiver, so Lazard's undraftable. So now let's talk about Randall Cobb. Woefully ineffective since leaving Green Bay, and now he's 31 years old, and I question whether he's the same receiver that Aaron Rodgers remembers from the last time they played together back in 2018.
Yeah.
You know, then he was okay. Since then, he's been bad. And even if we roll back the clock to Cobb's good old days with the Packers. So I looked at Cobb's last three seasons in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. He still wasn't that good for fantasy purposes. He averaged 43 yards and a quarter of a touchdown per game. That's all you were getting out of Randall Cobb when he was younger and better in 2016, 17, and 18. So Cobb is not anybody I'm interested in either, and he's going to split time with Lazard. Then there's rookie Amari Rodgers, who unfortunately is ideally suited for the slot. And so that's a real problem for him.
Yeah.
And it really looks like Amari Rodgers is going to be a special teamer this year. He's going to spend the season grooming in a very light role. He'll get a little bit of slot work when it's available. When there's four wide, he might be on the field. But I don't think he's going to be on the field enough.
I feel like the Cobb addition was such a great thing for Amari Rodgers, because I really like Amari Rodgers. I think he'd be great in that role. But now you know you'll never start him. He gets to learn under Cobb, and he can just sit the bat, and you can get him cheaper.
Right.
So, like, I think all around it was good for Amari and his dynasty empire value.
Yeah, the only downside is by the time he's playing next year, it's going to be Jordan Love throwing him the ball. Maybe the biggest winner out of all of this is Robert Tonyan, who finished last year really well. He scored in five straight games from week 11 to week 15, and then scored twice more in the playoffs. He scored 11 total times. Feels a little fluky, though. He was targeted inside the 5-yard line just 4 times and inside the 10-yard line just 8 times, and yet he still had 11 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Super high conversion rate on those. So maybe that doesn't work out as well that way. And he's very touchdown dependent as a fantasy player, because they targeted him only 3.5 times per game. Tonyan.
Like Funyan.
Yeah. Oh, it's Fun. Yeah, it's Tonyan.
Tonyan like yes, Funyan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I had it wrong, and now I got it right. So, the hope is that in this, his second year as a full-time starter, Scott, that Tonyan ends up getting incrementally better and that he earns and gets more targets from Aaron Rodgers.
His catch percentage was ridiculous last year.
And yes, it was. Number one in the league at 88%.
Yeah, that's something Rodgers is going to like.
Yes, that is how you build great vibes to your quarterback, by not dropping the balls he throws you. And his ADOT of 8 yards is pretty good for a tight end.
Yeah, that is. I was going to mention with Hawkinson in the last one, Hawkinson's is 11 on his career, which is ridiculous.
Sweet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, 11 yards per reception. No, you're talking about ADOT. Yeah, that's really good for ADOT.
That is a good ADOT.
Yep.
So Tanyan's got some upside that most of the other players in this offense, I think, don't have, as receivers especially. Let's go over to the running backs. Even with Jamal Williams gone, Aaron Jones is not, I don't think, going to get a dramatically bigger role, especially on the ground. I think most of Jamal Williams' rushing work is going to go to A.J. Dillon. Mm-hmm. And in last Thursday's press conference, Jones said he's dropped his body fat percentage. He says he's leaner and faster right now. Mm-hmm. He's changed his diet. He also said, and this is the really important thing, if you take nothing else out of this Packers conversation, get this. He's doing extra reps with offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett, specifically on his receiving techniques. Last two seasons, he caught 47 and 49 passes. Those are good numbers. A.J. Dillon can't catch. Jamal Williams has been getting 35 to 45 receptions per year. Almost all of those targets and receptions are going to go to Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones may have a Kamara Eckler-like uptick in volume of pass catches that nobody seems to be talking about. The Jamal Williams targets and receptions are going to go to Aaron Jones. A.J. Dillon had 3 targets all of last year. That's it. And that's why I think Aaron Jones is potentially sitting on a far better season than most people realize. We're going to talk more about him in a little bit.
Yep. I'm very much in agreement with you on basically all of that. I love the idea of Aaron Jones getting more passing, and I don't think Dillon gets it, but I do think Dillon gets a decent amount of work to at least be draft worthy.
Oh, for sure. And I like Dillon. Let's transition to him. He's presumed to get most of the 110, 120 carries that Jamal Williams had been getting. And in the limited sample size that he had last year, and it was limited for A.J. Mm-hmm. Dillon, we kept thinking he'd get more work, and it wasn't until the very end of the year, and especially in one snowy game. He ran pretty well. He averaged 5.3 yards per carry. He boasted an insane 26% broken tackle rate, which is one of the highest in the league.
It's those quads.
68% yard after contact rate was top quartile. He also averaged 3.5 yards after contact, which was elite. All that for A.J. Dillon. And that's a lot of why I think those carries from Jamal Williams will go to A.J. Dillon. And the catch, maybe, despite the massive frame that A.J. Dillon has. I mean, he looks perfectly, perfectly built for goal line use. They didn't give him any goal line use last year. And Aaron Jones made good on his goal line use.
Yep.
So we don't know for sure that he's going to get a bunch of the easy touchdowns. Maybe he will, but they've got a guy they like and has been good there, and Aaron Jones.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the riskiest player at his current ADP. I decided to go with A.J. Dillon here, who's going off the board as running back 40 in the 8th round, even though I like him and I think he's going to get the 110, 120 carries, but he can't catch, so he's not going to help you in PPR.
Yep.
And if he can't get, and he's not going to get the goal line touchdowns, that means your box score is going to be 12 carries for 55 yards.
Yeah, he's...
That just, 5 points does not move the needle.
Yeah, he's a spot start at best.
Yeah, I think
he's going in front of a lot of other running backs that have a clearer path.
Yes,
to either weekly production or RB1 production,
particularly in PPR.
Yeah,
player with the most upside compared to ADP is Aaron Jones. Yeah, I think his ADP is weirdly low, Scott. It's RB10, the beginning of the second round.
Mm-hmm.
If his PPR production is going to vault forward by 50%, maybe even double, I think he's got literally RB1 upside.
Yeah.
I mean, he could be the
one overall. Not
one
like
overall.
When we mentioned Amon-Ra St. Brown, I meant number one on the team.
Right.
This is RB1 overall.
Aaron Jones has that in him.
Yeah.
Clear pathway to, a top 5 RB spot, and he's currently going off the board at RB10.
Especially in an offense that should score a lot.
Yes.
You always want that.
You do want that. All right, let's transition over to the Chicago Bears, an offense in a fair amount of flux.
Yeah, we'll start at the quarterback position in an interesting spot because I'm going to talk about the third string quarterback.
Yeah, right.
The current third string quarterback, which is incredibly volatile in drafts right now. You will see him go in the ninth round.
Justin Fields, yes.
Or Justin Fields, exactly. Sorry for not mentioning that earlier. You can see him go in the ninth round or in the 17th round.
Yeah.
Because he does not have that locked up. And a lot of people who play in leagues that are like 18 rounds, 16 rounds, they don't want a third string quarterback or backup by end of training camp or maybe even starter by the season.
Yeah.
But they don't want a backup, you know, early on in a draft.
Right,
so
right.
He's going all over the place, but he's a league winner type pick.
He is.
He's one of those
guys.
That
yep.
he's your typical end of the draft league winner if you get him late enough.
See, I love getting Justin Fields
yep.
Late in drafts and just knowing, you know, knowing that I'm going to start him sooner or later. So yeah. I was in Chicago this week doing sports talk radio on 670 The Score with my friends there. And
yeah.
I did a show with two hosts, Dan and Layla. And I asked them, give me the week when Justin Fields is your starter.
Mm-hmm.
Dan said week 3, Layla said week 5.
Oh, week 6 versus the Packers would be an interesting
start.
Yeah,
wouldn't it? Tough spot. It's kind of a grinder to put him in, but
it would be fun.
But it tells you don't have to hold him that long. If that's, you know, if they're right, you don't have to hold Fields
right.
that long.
Yep.
You know, you could throw Ryan Fitzpatrick in. And, you know, who knows what happens. And then
yep.
play him out for a month and then
or,
you go transition.
Or Dalton or Garoppolo or one of
Even
these guys
more.
That
yeah,
might
right.
start the sure. season like that. Yeah.
I don't want
but,
Dalton. Though.
Yeah. But Fitzpatrick's a great idea for that type of move.
He's always
the only
great.
Problem with Justin Fields is he's a running quarterback. And we know they have so much trouble getting in the top 10 overall
yeah, right.
when they're full-time starters.
Exactly. Yep. exactly. Look at Jalen Hurst last year.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Jalen was able to be a top 10 fantasy quarterback with almost no passing production.
Yep. It's that Konami code. When you get that running, those rushing numbers, yeah, it's just a huge boom. So once he becomes the starter, he's going to be rostered in every league. So just grab him at the end of your draft mm-hmm. if you can. But there are leagues you have to reach. You really have to reach for him. But it's a league winning type of move. In the passing game, we really only have two options to talk about, honestly. Like, if you look at the Bears' dip chart, it's filled with a lot of nothing.
Yes.
It's really Allen Robinson, Fantasy Football Weekly's man, mm-hmm. Darnell Mooney,
yeah.
who like we, him. And especially you, but we were all really on all last year, and,
yep.
and people are finally starting to come around.
They are. I know.
Maybe Cole Kmet, who's got a little bit of a hype, but he's really going at the end of drafts and maybe not even drafted in some leagues.
Fairly so. They still have 9 tight ends on roster.
Absolutely. And Jimmy Graham's still
the goal line
back.
Tight end. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. The hype on Kmet is basically they had like 6-7 targets in 5 of his last 6 games last year. They started to get him open and, mm-hmm. and utilizing him more. And you know when someone ends the season hot, like Graham did,
yeah, right.
or like Arian Foster, Larry Johnson, like all these guys that end the year hot, they're the hot buzz for the next year. That's Kmet right now.
You remember the tight end that was at this time last year?
I don't.
Tyler Higbee.
Oh, sure,
had come
sure.
off that monster
yes.
December without Gerald Everett.
Yes.
And everybody pushed his ADP way up into like tight end 6 yep. or something.
In fairness to Higbee, Everett came back. Their wide receivers came back healthy. In this one, this situation, Graham did come back, but yeah. Graham was there before. But they shipped out Anthony Miller.
Right,
and
right.
They didn't add anything.
Right.
But he's undrafted. That's way too much time on Cole Kmet. Just a sleeper to keep your mind on while you're watching early in the season, maybe for waiver wire. Allen Robinson, we don't have to talk about him much. He's had 150 plus targets 2 straight years.
Yeah.
He's quarterback proof, but he might be getting a huge upgrade.
He might be.
Soon.
Yep.
So he's going 3rd round as wide receiver 12. I think that's fair. I think he's a top 12 wide receiver, and he's going as wide receiver 12. Mm-hmm. You know, if you told me he ends at wide receiver 4, I get it. A wide receiver 14? Okay, you know.
So here's the downside in Robinson, who's never had good quarterbacking and always been able to produce anyway, is Andy Dalton's not going to give him a lot, and then he'll transition to Justin Fields, who's learning the NFL on the fly.
Right.
And we don't even know what kind of passer he could be. We know he's got a big arm and that, you know, he could unlock a deep passing game, but, you know, how long is that going to take? So it feels like there's no pathway for Allen Robinson to have really good quarterbacking early, and maybe at all this year.
Man, I feel like we've seen enough of the first years out of, and I'm not saying Fields is this yet, but the first year of Dak, the first year of Herbert, the first the first full year of Mahomes. Like, I feel like we've seen enough of those recently to go, there is a path there. It's just, you probably don't want to bet on the path.
Most people don't think Fields is, was as NFL ready as most of the guys that, you just mentioned.
This is fair. This is very fair. Anthony Miller is gone, but honestly, that changed nothing for me. He was really falling by the wayside at the end of things last year. Darnell Mooney had 55 targets in the last 8 games last year.
That's great.
And if you extrapolate that, I think that's 110 targets on the season. Just gonna.
That's pretty good.
But yeah, he really had started to come on strong. And there's clips of how many times he was missed on routes. He was wide open to make huge impacts. I think he's in for basically a breakout year going in the 12th round. Which is an absolute steal. Wide receiver 54, because I have him far higher than that. Maybe I just like him too much. I feel like Allen Robinson going as wide receiver 12 is fair. I feel like Darnell Mooney is a steal at wide receiver 54. It's an offense that the concern is the defense is really good.
Yeah.
You know, and so maybe they don't need to pass quite as much, but it's been good for a few years, and these players have performed, and the lack of a depth chart is where they get their value.
For sure.
They're going to see most of the work. In the running game, David Montgomery had a breakout year last year, and I know he had 54 receptions.
Yes.
But Tariq Cohen was out like the whole year. Tariq Cohen is a guy who had 195 targets in the two previous years.
Right. Now, he doesn't enter this season healthy, though,
right.
So we don't know for sure that he's going to be the old Tariq Cohen, or even if they'll start week one.
Ugh, man, this is true, but it's hard to imagine a scenario where it doesn't factor this season, right? I don't feel like Montgomery is going to get all that many, like a huge amount of receptions, even though we've already seen the camp highlights of Fields to Montgomery throwing passes. but I feel like last year with his 300 plus touches and his 54 receptions and his barely over 1,000 yards is probably right about where he's, you know, about his ceiling. Mm. You know, he might get more yards and more carries this year, but drop it in the receiving front. But I think he's fair. I think he's fair at RB 18. I actually have him lower than that, but
I do too. I have him a little lower than that. Too, I think like I have 21.
Yeah.
You know, Matt Nagy says he's going to run him a lot. He's going to treat him like a workhorse back. Matt Nagy is a stone cold liar, or just somebody who, like, you know, he means it when he says it, but then the games come and he can't stop who he is.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see if Montgomery continues to get that much work. Now, in terms of being like a special back,
he's not.
I thought he'd be better at this level, at the NFL level, than he is. He is a capable back, and that's about it.
Especially after at Iowa State, like he broke records for missed tackles and broken tackles. Yeah. His elusiveness was off the charts.
And he's not but that way in the
maybe
NFL.
Maybe it's just the teams he played. Because, he is not. He is very average. He's a good NFL back, but he's got a starting role where he gets 300 touches.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. Like I have him below Swift. You know, Swift is, I think, RB 19 and Montgomery's RB 18. I have him below Swift. I have him below Sanders. Like, I have him just below some of these other in that
range. I'm really warming up to Sanders.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's being misdrafted a lot.
Yeah.
I may push Sanders into like RB 15, 16 range.
I saw Henderson go above all three of those the other day. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm doing that.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, but not to get us off topic again with Sanders and other stuff.
Tariq Cohen.
All right, so Cohen.
Cohen, too high. He's going in the 11th round. It's just too high. You've already mentioned the concerns about how much he's going to be in the seasons. But he's mostly a reception back. And you know, he's not going to get a lot of carries. This offense needs to be, if he was on a high power, like a Green Bay offense, I'd be like, heck yes, give me Tariq Cohen with all that opportunity. I just don't think it's in here with the Bears offense and that defense.
Agreed.
So I think he's way too high. And Damian Williams is getting drafted, but I'm not in on that at all.
I kind of am as my last pick in my draft.
He's 14th round.
Yeah. Like, well, that's what I'm saying. I don't trust Cohen to come back and be himself.
Right.
I don't trust Montgomery as a great runner. I don't know. And I'm reliving the playoffs from 2 years ago when Damian Williams was shockingly competent.
This is my problem. I wrote it right down. I'm like, I credit Andy Reid and that offensive line at that time and that offense at that time more than I credit Damian Williams.
I guess that's fair.
But he did look, he did it. You know, like we can't take that away from it.
That's right.
It's not like he shriveled up and failed in that situation.
That's right.
He had a great situation,
which,
and he made the most of it.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire did.
Yeah.
Le'Veon Bell did. Well, their offensive line is terrible, but still, those guys weren't able to produce on a regular basis.
But yeah, Damian Williams, mid 14th round, RB 63. I guess that's fine. Honestly, it's I'm probably not drafting him, and I'm the waiver wire guy on him, but maybe that just means I don't get him.
All right, so who is the Bears player that you think is the riskiest compared to current ADP?
Yeah, I think it's both right there in the running backs. I think David Montgomery is the riskiest because he's going above guys I like better, and I can see a pathway for his receptions to go down. I can
a
see
lot.
The offense going down and not and I think I think he's the riskiest. Tariq Cohen is like right there with him with the super risky, you know, because 11th round.
All right, player with the most upside compared to ADP.
It's clear. It's Darnell Mooney. It's Darnell Mooney.
We don't even have to say anymore.
Yep.
When we come back, we will break down the Minnesota Vikings from a fantasy perspective, what we expect from this new offense that is now in its seventh year with seven new offensive coordinators, which is staggering. How do you even do that? But that's the spot the Vikings are in.
That's what killed Alex Smith's career.
Well, and a devastating leg injury.
Yeah, well, yeah,
that too. also, just want to get quickly. I'm gonna ask you for your thoughts on Cam Akers from a dynasty standpoint, knowing how much work you put into dynasty, and whether or not you know what I saw. He got moved for a pick in one of my leagues. Somebody decided to get out of him, and I want to know if you think you should move Cam Akers as well. Paul Charchi and Scott Fish with you. Back in moments. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly, with you, Paul Charchian and Scott Fish. We've got one team in the NFC North to break down, the Minnesota Vikings, right here in our backyard. But, Scott, I want to talk about Cam Akers from a dynasty standpoint. He suffered an Achilles injury.
Mm-hmm.
The total number of running backs, history of NFL, that have come back to have meaningful careers off an Achilles injury is nobody.
Right.
Nobody.
Yep.
Cam Akers, and it's a tragedy for Cam, and maybe he'll be the first. Cam Akers got traded in one of my leagues. The team that had him was rebuilding anyway, and they traded him for a next year second round pick, mid second rounder.
I've seen that a lot.
Is that about the right? Is that about where he's going?
Yep. Well, I have seen that. I have seen that a decent amount, but normally you have to get a future pick because it's someone who's playing for this year and they don't want to trade a now asset.
Right. Right.
I mean, I do have a list here of some of the trades that happened literally today for him.
Yeah.
But so like Cam Akers for Michael Thomas, which is interesting.
Oh, I'd much rather have Michael Thomas. Yep. Okay.
Cam Akers straight up for Zach Moss.
Okay.
Which is interesting. Cam Akers for Josh Jacobs.
Man, people are getting real. They're getting good players for Cam Akers.
Yep.
Good for you.
Cam Akers and Daryl Henderson for DJ Moore. So you had to throw in Daryl Henderson to get up there.
Yeah.
But a second rounder for Cam.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a second rounder for Cam. There's a couple of those. Yeah. So, apparently, that is a common price.
You and I would pay for Zach. I'd much rather have Zach Moss healthy than hoping that Cam Akers is the first player, first running back in the history of the game to come back and have a meaningful career off an Achilles.
Here's Cam in a second for a first.
Oh, there you go. So. And that makes sense, too.
Sure.
All right, let's talk Vikings. So Vikings enter the season, as I mentioned, a new offensive coordinator in every season. The last time the Vikings went back-to-back years with the same coordinator was 2014 and 15.
That's crazy.
Every year, a new coordinator. And they bring in, it is now Clint Kubiak, who's going to run his old man's offense. I'm sure he's got his own twists and things that keep it fresh for Clint.
That's almost bad as our quarterback streak. We haven't had a quarterback start all every game of the season 2 years in a row since Tarkenton.
Well, okay, wait.
Cousins missed a week 17.
Yeah, by choice. He's played 16, 15, and 16 games, and that was a by choice one.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, you can't take that away from Kirk.
All right.
So, you know, despite all these changes, you would think with seven different coordinators in 7 years, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, that they would that the offense would be like all over the place. It'd be very different year to year, and it'd be all these. But it really isn't. It's always been, and I think because of who Mike Zimmer is, this is a run first offense, and will continue to be so. The biggest issue for the Vikings, and the thing you need to concentrate most on, is the offensive line. The Vikings parted ways with their second-best offensive lineman, left tackle Riley Reiff. They filled his spot with first-round rookie Christian Darrisaw. Unfortunately, Darrisaw missed the offseason program after undergoing core surgery in the offseason, and he may not be ready to start the season. We don't know yet, and you know what his status is going to be, and that's something to watch through training camp. If he can't go, they're going to use utility linemen in that spot, and that would worry me a lot. The Vikings guards are the league's worst tandem, or they were last year, so they spent a third-round pick on Ohio State's Wyatt Davis. He also missed the offseason program with injury, but Davis is practicing early in training camp and has looked good through the first few days of training camp, and I expect Wyatt Davis to be a starter on this offensive line at guard, and Ezra Cleveland is the other starter. Let's talk Kirk Cousins, quietly very solid last year. Get this. ADP is quarterback 19. Two of the last 3 years, he's been quarterback 11 or better.
He's constantly slept on.
Constantly, right? From week eight forward last year.
Quarterback Robert Woods or something.
A little bit. From week eight forward last year, he had 24 touchdown passes and 3 interceptions. That was Kirk Cousins. And he played behind the league's 29th ranked pass blocking unit last year. Now, the offensive line could even be worse. That's the scary part. I mean, if it turns out Christian Darrisaw isn't ready to be at least as good as Riley Reiff was last year, this offensive line could actually be worse somehow, which would be very frustrating. Despite his leaky line, only 7 quarterbacks held the ball longer in the pocket than Kirk did, which I attribute to 2 things. Number 1, bravery, because he gets demolished all the time. And the Vikings schematically just throw downfield. This is part of what they like to do. They like to run, pull defenses closer to line of scrimmage, and then have Kirk throw over you.
Yep.
That's their recipe on offense. He had a higher completed air yards than guys like Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson, who we think of as long ball passers.
Yeah. Yep.
And Kirk's completed air yards were higher than those guys. Offensive line worries aside, he's got 2 elite receivers. Kirk does. He's got a new safety blanket in D.D. Westbrook and a third-year prospect in Irv Smith, who we'll talk about here. Well, we'll go there now, I think. Why not? Let's start with let's go to the receivers. Let's go to Adam Thielen. Coming off a 14-touchdown season, but that's an outlier. His previous high bit was 10. He's been more like a 8-9 touchdown guy, and it feels like a regression is coming.
Counterpoint, his third baby's coming. His first time he had a kid, 1,300 yards. His second time he had a kid, 14 touchdowns.
I like it.
Do we like the baby there?
The baby boom. It's the baby boom.
The baby boom.
For Adam Thielen. That would be great. He had the 3rd most red zone targets last year and the 3rd most targets from inside the 10-yard line last year. So if those were to continue, that would be great, but that also feels like it may not hold up. Mm. His route tree, though, got noticeably shorter last year. And he yielded long routes to Justin Jefferson, and I think that's probably going to continue. His route running and hands are excellent. He's going to be a very safe fantasy pick. Mm-hmm. Currently going off the board, I believe ADP is wide receiver 20, I believe, for Adam Thielen. Justin Jefferson's first season was bonkers, and he wasn't even the starter for the first 2 games of the year. And he ended up with more targets and more yards than Adam Thielen. He set numerous rookie receiving records, and he was a standout player in minicamp for the Vikings this offseason. Remember, he did all that with no offseason. Now he rolls in with a year under his belt and a minicamp and heads into training camp. And he was the first player in NFL history last year. He hit 1,400 yards on 125 or fewer targets. Not the first rookie,
right?
First player ever to hit 1,400 yards on 125 targets or less.
That's impressive.
It is. He's already one of the league's best route runners. He led the league in yards per target and had a very healthy ADOT of 11. He commanded a whopping 36% of the team's air yards as a rookie. It's all nuts for him, and it's scary to think about how good Jefferson will be if he takes a typical year 2 jump that most good receivers take.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible Justin Jefferson's the best receiver in the league. It's possible we're talking about him next year as wide receiver 1, wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3, it take a lot because this is still a run first offense, but he might just be that good.
Yep.
Vikings added D.D. Westbrook, who will be the team's true slot receiver, but I do not believe there's any fantasy value there. Mm-mm. Let's talk tight ends.
Give him the value you gave Jarius Wright.
Yeah, right, which is to say virtually none.
Yeah.
Kyle Rudolph's gone, and that opens up 40-ish targets for somebody. It'll probably be Irv Smith. Rudy was also a frequent red zone target. Prior to last year when Rudy really tailed off, he was gobbling up 20 to 30% of the team's red zone targets. That could go to Irv Smith, but not necessarily. And when we talk about Irv Smith, I'm going to give you more bad than good here, I think.
Zimmer said the exact opposite.
That's right. Zimmer, in fact, I've got the quote in my notes.
So do I.
All right. So Irv Smith is still only 23 years old. But you're getting a 23-year-old who's got 1,100 snaps under his belt, which is good. I mean, a lot of guys are entering the league at 23 as rookies, and he's got 1,100 snaps under his belt. He's a former second-round pick, high equity. He's a good athlete. There are problems with Irv Smith. His blocking is bad, and his pass blocking is atrocious. And that means he may not be on the field as much as we'd want. In the Mike Zimmer era, the Vikings just don't throw to their tight ends that much, and that could be an issue as well. And the team really likes Tyler Conklin, the other tight end. A few weeks ago, that was July 1st, when asked about Irv Smith getting more reps this year, here's what Mike Zimmer said. Honestly, I don't think it's any bigger role for Smith whatsoever. I think it's a bigger role for Tyler Conklin.
Yep.
That's a worry. Now, you could say coaches lie, and they do. But the thing is, Zimmer is about as straight a shooter as there is in the NFL.
Yeah.
Usually if Zimmer says it, it's legit.
Yeah.
And also mention this. The next-gen stats, one of their stats is cushion, how much separation you're getting. Dead last in the NFL at among all tight ends and wide receivers, Irv Smith.
Interesting.
Dead last in cushion. Wow. So, I'm a lot more nervous about Irv Smith than many others. There are a lot of people that are projecting a breakout. I don't think it's coming.
So Rudolph missed the last four games last year.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a preview.
Yeah.
Do you know their splits?
Bet it's close to 50-50 between Tyler Conklin and Irv Smith.
Conklin, 15 for 178 and a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Irv Smith, 15 for 183
Jeez.
And three touchdowns.
Wow.
And most of Irv's stats, two of the touchdowns and like 60, 70 yards, came in that 52-33 New Orleans shootout game.
Wow.
So like outside of that one huge just pass all game.
Yeah.
Conklin kind of outproduced him in the other three.
Yeah. That says a lot.
Yeah.
So I think I'm warding people off on Irv Smith. Yeah. I think you should show caution.
Temper.
Dalvin Cook is in the conversation with the league's best backs. He was Pro Football Focus's second-ranked runner last year.
He does seem good.
He's really good. Last year, he was second in total yards after contact. He was second in missed tackles. And he's performed incredibly well for a player running behind for his entire career, terrible offensive lines.
Yep.
And yet he's still managed to be effective. The best thing about Dalvin Cook for fantasy owners is Mike Zimmer.
Yep.
The Vikings have been a top eight rushing team by attempts in five of Zimmer's seven seasons. The two seasons when they didn't finish top eight were Dalvin Cook's two lost seasons.
Mm.
Alexander Mattison remains one of the most viable handcuffs in fantasy football. He is a good scheme fit for the Vikings, and I generally don't like to handcuff, but if you want to handcuff here, go for it. Riskiest player at current ADP? I really have a hard time with this because most of the Vikings, only like three or four Vikings they even want to draft. I think Adam Thielen's appropriately priced at wide receiver 20, round 5, but maybe just due to touchdown regression and maybe because Justin Jefferson might be just insanely good that maybe Adam Thielen drops off a bit.
Yeah, I honestly, you could go with almost anyone. Like, because Cook is going mid-first round, there's a lot of risk there, but I think it's fair.
It is fair.
I think Jefferson, there are a lot of people that think he's going to regress, that the defense is better, that they're going to lean on the run, they'll be lower scoring, you know, like, I agree with you.
Like, I thought about Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson's going off the board as wide receiver 8.
It could, yeah.
It you know, could, that's, that is a lot for a second-year guy, but he's so good.
It could be Irv, too, because he's going as a top 10 tight end, and he might fall short of that.
Player with the most upside compared to ADP is Kirk Cousins. His ADP is quarterback 19, round 13.
Yeah.
That's he was, like I mentioned, quarterback 11 last year. Quarterback 9 2 years before that.
We talked about players being drafted at their ceiling, below their ceiling. He's being drafted below his floor.
Like, it really is.
Somehow well below his floor.
I know. It's there's been a lot of fun. Thanks, yeah. Scott. We encourage you to check out guillotineleagues.com. You can follow Scott Fish at ScottFish24 on Twitter. Scott Fish bowls are all wrapped.
Yep.
It was a great season.
All done.
The fun. Scott Fish Guillotine League all wrapped up.
Yep.
That went great.
Nice.
Yeah. Great. Glad to have you here. And we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.